let's get agreement that this is a strategic priority.
That area of alignment and synergy can be very important.
In the future, we're committed to expand
value-based care. Time, there's still progress that needs to be made.
This is Healthcare Strategies.
Hi, and welcome to Healthcare Strategies. I'm Olivia Kaler, Senior Editor of Life Science Intelligence and Pharma News Intelligence. Today, we are speaking with John Paul Portal, Managing Director of Pharmaceutical and Medical Device Litigation at MSP Recovery Law Firm, about escalating legal challenges facing pharmaceutical and medical device manufacturers in light of recent controversies and product liability claims. John Paul, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Olivia. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Great. To start us off, could you please share with our audience the key factors driving the surge in litigation against major insulin manufacturers and within the CPAP multi-district litigation third-party payer subcommittee?
Sure. Thank you. And it's a very important question for what we do here at MSP and generally. We represent basically what in the industry term is a third-party payer. And that could range anywhere from Medicare managed organizations, Medicaid managed care organizations, providers, hospital systems, and basically any payer within the healthcare spectrum who basically was improperly charged for certain drugs or certain devices, whether because they were defective and worthless, or there was an overpayment of drugs at a super competitive price, pay for delay. A perfect example of that is the insulin litigation. In particular, we know that in this country, diabetes is skyrocketed in terms of the associated cost. And unfortunately for the injectable insulins, there's so many millions of Americans that are dependent on insulin to manage their disease process. And it's so important in terms of preventative care as well. Unfortunately, when it comes to insulin, the major manufacturers, and now also including the pharmacy benefit managers, the PBMs, have really colluded in terms of increasing the price and accessibility of these drugs for millions of Americans, sometimes leading to many of them not taking their insulin at the regimen that's required because they can't afford it, having to go to Canada or the countries to get it because the cost is so expensive, whether it's the out-of-pocket. And really, when we look at it, what has been the driving force, especially in the last decade, has been that the price of these insulin drugs, with really no major advances in terms of the research and development of the drug itself is pretty much the same, right? It's a question of the cost of it. And the supply chain cost hasn't really dramatically increased. What's increased is that because of corporate greed, they've increased the prices somewhere upwards of 350-400% with no real necessity, right? And this drives up the cost for everyone, American taxpayers, American patients, third-party payers, whether you're Medicare or Medicare Advantage organization or any of the other providers within the system. And the problem is that there really wasn't any major oversight, except that in the last probably 3 or 4 years, there's been major congressional oversight and investigations, subpoenas issued to these insulin manufacturers, and now more so the PBMs, the pharmacy benefit managers that I explained, right? In addition to not just congressional oversight, you have the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, and now what's really spurred this litigation most recently is the advent of different state attorney generals who have now taken the fight seeking to recover these costs. So you have states like Arkansas, New Hampshire, California, all of them have now, those state attorney generals have joined in this fight to really recover the cost of what they've overpaid for these drugs. What I'd like to say is that we at MSP have been involved in this litigation. We're going on now almost 6 years since 2018. We've been in the trenches. What we saw last year has been remarkable. For the first time, these insulin manufacturers have announced a cap on price increases, basically dramatically reducing the price increases of the insulins from 70, 75, and 78% respectively between the major manufacturers. So Sanofi, Novo Nordisk, Eli Lilly. And that's remarkable. And it's a wonderful thing for the accessibility for patients and also for think about preventative care, right? The more patients that have access, especially with their insulins, drive down the healthcare costs. So it benefits everyone, starting with the patient to the payers and providers, right? Which ultimately what we all want to see is accessible medical care, medical treatment to Americans so that they get the proper care and that they're overall healthier. So I think that's one of the biggest driving forces in terms of insulin. Similarly, in medical devices that you asked about, which is a great question, we're seeing this. And in the CPAP litigation, this is really remarkable as well, because Philips, which is the major CPAP recall, and for your audience, I'm sure they know, but when we talk about CPAP, we're talking about devices for sleep apnea. So it could be anywhere from your BiPAPs to your CPAP machines, the ones that folks are given by usually the DME to take home. They have the oxygen and that. And so what happened there is that a part of the component of the CPAP machines, the sound abatement foam, so think of like a sponge, it's very flimsy, and that foam degrades. And as it degrades, imagine someone who's sleeping at night, 8 hours, breathing in this oxygen. They have these microscopic little fibers that they're breathing in or lodging in their lungs, and ultimately can cause serious medical consequences, whether respiratory diseases, cancers, or others. So there was a big push, A, by Philips to get these devices recalled, get them out of the market. And the FDA has put a lot of pressure on Philips to recall these devices, get the new ones out and into the market so that all those individuals who are taking it can benefit and not be subject to potentially a hazardous condition. So for our end on the third party payer side, we were instrumental in, along with the consumers, in pushing this case. Philips, to its credit, because they've been getting so much pressure from the FDA, decided, you know what, in order to get this resolved, we're going to go ahead and do a massive settlement to reimburse American consumers and third-party payers who either paid for these CPAP and BiPAP machines, whether it was a rental, a lease, or an outright purchase. And that's been really in record timing within a year and a half, which is really it's not common, given most of these litigations, as I alluded to in insulin, can last for years and years. We've seen that, for example, with the opioid litigation, right? The national opioid litigation, action pending in Ohio, in Cleveland, Cuyahoga County. Judge Polster, who's leading that litigation, that's been ongoing now for also, I think, since 2017 or 2018, cases that we're involved in as well. And that's been really important because, like insulin now, the opioid litigation really changed the field in terms of you're getting now not just individual consumers who are being harmed, you have third-party payers, but you also have municipal entities, cities, counties, states that are also getting involved. So now you have pressures from all these different key players that are really impacting the pharmaceutical industry, how they act, the conduct that they do. And I think going forward into the future, we're going to see a lot more of this litigation, but I think a lot of more oversight. And like we say, from my end on the litigation side, sometimes when the government or private actors, the private industry doesn't regulate itself, it takes litigation sometimes to police the industry. And sometimes there's some really good outcomes. I know a lot of your audience members might not agree with that, but the reality is that over time and over years, at the end of the day, it's these kind of pressure points that we got to push to change the dialogue, to change the conduct. So ultimately, what your audience wants, what we want, what our clients want are the same thing, is better access to healthcare, cheaper access to healthcare, and not to overpay for these drugs and not to have any type of guardrails that prevent us from getting that access. And that's really what we're striving for here.
Right. And to have the safety aspect of the regulatory oversight that you're talking about. So yeah, that's really great. Those are all great points. Thank you for sharing. Could you also share what are some key considerations for pharma companies and healthcare organizations when engaging in settlement negotiations or alternative dispute resolution mechanisms in complex litigation cases. More specifically, how do you balance the interests of all parties involved while striving for those outcomes that you said, right? Fair, equitable, we want access, all those types of things. How do you balance those?
That's a great question. It's also a very difficult question to answer, right? That's something that we do day in and day out. And I'll give you a little background on MSP and what we do and how that really goes to address the question that you asked. What's nice about MSP, even though I'm on the law firm side doing the litigation end of it, our parent company is MSP Recovery. And what's interesting, and it goes to some of the other questions you have, is that what we did and the way we changed the game a little is that we're a healthcare data aggregator. And so we have an analytics company that uses several technologies, proprietary software, industry knowledge in terms of reimbursement. How do we address and resolve reimbursement and compliance problems? That's what we do. And we do that through coordination of payments. We do that through collection efforts. We do that also by something we call the clearinghouse. And so what that means is that what we try to do and when we approach these type of settlement discussions and alternate dispute resolutions is how do we do it is what usually it requires getting a healthcare economist. And what we do is we look at depending on the type of case, right? So if it's a case that involves an insulin or a pay for delay or an antitrust type of case, usually it's what's called a delta case, right? And it says, hey, like insulin, it's a safe drug, necessary drug, but you overcharge this. So how do we determine what's a commercially reasonable price for this? And how do we drive down the cost? And like everyone else, right, there's multiple risk factors that go involved in that. There's risk scores, there's projections that are put into place by actuaries. So a lot of your audience will be familiar with those terms, especially if you're dealing with Medicare, right? There are CMS bids, projections that kind of come in, and it's on the individual patient's risk score. So when we look at these damage models, one of the things we look at is, okay, is there any kind of baseline? So one of the things we look at is what is the overall U.S. health expenditure rates? How do we put into place inflation? And then we use those different factors to come up with a value where we say, look, what was commercially reasonable is if you were charging me $20 per vial, and then 10 years later, now you're charging me $1,000 for a 10 ml vial, something's off. What is it? That doesn't account for inflation, doesn't account for U.S. expenditure rates. So is a 3% increase reasonable versus a 18 or 20 or 25% increase reasonable? And then that's where we look at. And I think the pharmaceutical industry is looking at as well when they're looking at damages. Another one that's interesting that we haven't really seen until the CPAP litigation, coming back to it, is the damage models there. And obviously, I can't get into too much of the details because a lot of this is confidential, but they applied what's called a pseudo market share analysis, which basically said, hey, we can't really determine how many of these machines are at play, but we know for a certain market how big Philips was in that market, whether it's in the Northeast region or by state or by county. And where are these payers and consumers located? Can we come up with a market share to determine a reasonable value for compensation for those individuals or for the third-party payers, right? So there is, it's very complex. It's evolving. Sometimes it just used to be a question of, and I'll give you another example, Valsartan, which I know is a question you had. Valsartan, like metformin or Chantix, is a contaminated drug case, right? That's where it's not safe. It breaks down with NDMA, other nitrosamines. And I always fumble that one, so I apologize and apologize to the scientists in the audience. I'm trying. But basically, the NDMA contamination, part of the allegations are, hey, this is a worthless drug, unlike the insulins or other drugs that have its efficacy here, they're not because they're worthless because you should have never sold them because it was a question of the manufacturing process, right? And in that case, it's dollar for dollar. Hey, it's a worthless drug. If I paid you $10, I should be entitled to get reimbursed $10. So like I say, these are just some examples. It is complex. It's something that I think is also case by case, but there's some general things. I think that a lot of it takes into account a lot of what, especially your healthcare systems and the bigger companies that use actuaries and projections and healthcare economists, all those different practices and specialties come into play and really drive how these cases are resolved. And it's also the interest, right? Like in CPAP, Philips had an interest to get this resolved for other reasons. That comes into play as well. So all important factors. And separately, kind of like we did with insulin, the state attorney generals have a different perspective in the way they look at this, because they have, both them as well as the DOJ, have the benefit of having be able to enforce criminal penalties or civil penalties against these companies, right? Just like we see with many of these companies, the DOJ will come out and they'll impose very significant penalties on them for doing a lot of the same conduct that then civilly, you know, your healthcare providers, your hospital networks, your Medicare Advantage organizations now civilly go and try to collect as well to be reimbursed for basically costs that they either overpaid for, should have never paid for in the first place, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for highlighting how different all of these cases are. And it definitely highlights how complex dealing with these are. So thank you. I appreciate it. And you mentioned Valsartan. I'm going to go back to that. Obviously, your involvement in litigations concerning medications like Acthar, Chantix, you mentioned, Metformin, you mentioned, and Valsartan, those showcase your experience and understanding of the pharma industry greatly. So if you can share, what are emerging trends or challenges that you may foresee in pharma litigation, particularly regarding novel drugs and regulatory frameworks?
Sure. So let me take first the novel drugs. I think that with the advent of biosimilars, it's changing the game. I think that right now, folks both on the FDA side and the pharmaceutical side are trying to figure out that path. I don't think it's by any means clear yet. There's some folks that say, yeah, it's crystal clear. I don't think so, just from my end, from what I see. And I see that a lot, obviously, we see so much patent litigation between the brand manufacturers and the generics. I think with the biosimilars, that I think you're going to see as well. And so I put that within the novel bucket, even though technically they're not novel, but it is novel in terms of the regulations are fairly new. And what's going to qualify? How do we apply the ANDAs? All of that really comes into play. And I think that there's going to be a lot of changes in terms of regulations. I think that there might be some litigation just from a just being able to get these drugs out into market and onto formularies and getting them approved, right? Forget the litigation side of it, just being able to get them out and to be distributed, and the cost effectiveness of them, and how different pharmacy benefit managers that control large batches of formularies across the country for different, whether commercial plans or Medicare plans on the part, Medicare Part D, how do we put those on there? How are they going to pay for it? How is CMS going to reimburse them? Are they going to go on a tier one, tier two, tier three? So it becomes very complex. And I think you're going to see a lot of shifts in that area in terms of that. The second component of your question, which is the regulatory shifts, I think like we're seeing to circle back in these NDMA contamination cases, especially with generics like the Chantix, Metformin, and Valsartan, it is we have a major influx of generic drugs coming from overseas drug manufacturers, generics, particularly from China, India, and to some extent, Israel. And so I think that we will see, as we've seen in these cases, a lot of that landscape has now changed because it does become a challenge in how do you really regulate the manufacturing processes in these plants that are overseas to make sure that the drugs, the prescription drugs that are coming into the country, are that they're efficacious, that they're safe, that they're not contaminated, that they're properly made, properly stored, properly transported, the logistics behind it. Now, think about that, right? So one of the big things with the NDMA contamination cases is transport. It is, are you exposing these drugs to certain temperatures that then cause the ingredients, the chemicals inside, to degrade, and then now the drug either becomes worthless or carcinogenic, and there's a whole slew of other problems, right? Or basically it becomes a placebo. It's just might not cause anything, but it's also not causing, it's not resolving what the drug is intended to resolve, right? And to address. So I think that's where you're going to see a lot of changes, just because as we see more manufacturing overseas, and it is a multi-billion dollar industry, as we all know, especially with generics, I think that's a big problem. And particularly with China. And for example, the Valsartan litigation, the main defendant in Valsartan, which was actually, we were set for trial, unfortunately for unforeseen circumstances, the March 18th trial was continued. The major manufacturer there, ZHP, is a Chinese manufacturer. So from now a litigation standpoint, it becomes challenging as well, because now we have to travel there. We have to then comply with their laws. How do we issue subpoenas? Do we have to go through the Hague Convention? So there's a whole bunch of other legal hurdles that also become very challenging. And I think as litigators, both for on the plaintiff side, whether we're on the consumer or the TPP side, the third-party payers, as well as for the defense counsel that are here in the States, how do you maneuver these different international laws and even taking a deposition, right? For example, if you want to take a deposition of someone in Germany and you're in the United States, you got to go through the Hague Convention and you have to set the deposition, by way of example, at the U.S. consulate office. Can't take it, you know, on your own. But if you're in London, if they voluntarily appear, you can take it anywhere. And there's court reporters. So every country changes. There's so many shifting dynamics. It's very complex. From my end, it's also very exciting. The pharmaceutical litigation landscape is significantly changing because you're getting much more involvement by the third-party payers, all the big ones. So like us, MSP, the United Healthcares, the Humanas, the Cignas, the Aetnas, you're seeing a lot of these big players coming in and being much more aggressive in terms of their litigation tactics, because we're seeing the billions of dollars that are being lost. And ultimately, that American taxpayer is paying for that. Especially think if you're in Medicare, that's all money that's coming out of the Medicare Trust Fund. So it's very important in what we're doing to help, like I said, police to a certain extent the industry.
Right. Great examples. Thank you. As we look to the future, and you noted how complicated this whole industry is, what advice, if any, would you offer to pharmaceutical companies and healthcare organizations who are navigating the legal complexities of the industry, particularly considering the emerging technologies and regulatory shifts that you were just talking about?
That's a great question. I think that it really does require a terms of a deep dive. I think that the pharmaceutical companies, the big ones here in the States, to a certain extent, have done a good job in preparing for that. Where my concern really lies is in terms of going forward, how do we come up with a system that works for everyone? It's hard. I don't think that there's an easy answer to that one, Olivia. I wish I had the answer. I'd probably be getting paid a lot more. But I think that, like everything else, if you have proper processes, checks and balances, protocols in place, and you look at it, I think that there is a way, there is a path forward. The interesting question, though, is now with the integration of AI and other technological advancements, how is that going to change the landscape and the marketplace? And I think it is. By way of example, just happenstance, we have an office in Puerto Rico. We were down there last week. And I'm chatting it up in the elevator with an individual, and lo and behold, he's at a conference for pharmacy benefit managers. And the focus of the conference is, how are we using AI and how's it going to change PBMs and how we do business? So talk about being right on point to the day, right? So this was a huge conference that was happened to be going on. So we talked it up. So you're really seeing how AI is being implemented across the board, I think everywhere. And it's going to be really interesting to see how we use that in terms of the market shifts, how pharmacy benefit managers, the PBMs, I think, have played in certainly in the last 5 years a significant major role in terms of driving and regulating the cost of drugs and accessibility in this country. And I think that that is where a lot more focus needs to be on and how they play that out and how they work, because at the end of the name, it's a numbers game, right? That's how the PBMs got so big and so powerful, because they're able to leverage the fact that they have contracts with significant numbers. So they have contracts with insurers or plans that have 5 million members versus a one-off plan that might have 100,000. Obviously, they have a leverage, and they're able to go to the manufacturers directly, to the wholesalers. And then you have this interplay, right, where you might have an entity that is both a wholesaler, retail pharmacy, and has their own PBM, right? So now who's regulating who? And I can name them. They know who they are, but they're out there. That's very interesting to see how that's going to play out as well, because now we start thinking, and if you think about this long term, think about monopolies. This is monopolization 101. So those are the thoughts into the future that I think some companies have to be cognizant of, and us on our side of the V are also looking at as well. Because ultimately, like I said, this comes down to access and affordability.
Right. Several good points there as you brought up AI. You didn't mention data analytics, but that's also something that is super hot right now, especially with personal security surrounding data and data sharing, since we are dealing with healthcare information. So that's obviously, we've seen with the internet, we're slow to regulate, we're slow to make laws. So all of this rapid pace, technological advancement, it's going so rapid, right? And I just feel like the laws are not caught up at all.
No, absolutely. And from our end, like I mentioned at the very top of our conversation, what's nice about working with MSP is that because we are a healthcare aggregator, we deal with data analytics day in and day out. And it's extremely important. So for us in our business model, it is critically important that we are HIPAA compliant. In fact, we are SOC 2 certified, which is one of the highest levels of security. We have high trust certifications as well. And it's a very complex, very lengthy, hard process to get approved. We've been through it. We felt the pain, but we're there. So I completely understand what you're saying, and I agree. And I think that as we go forward, it's critically important that we really focus on those areas. And really, I think it's an emerging trend that if I tell somebody who's studying now, that's an area to really look into, because as we go into the future, especially with AI, and sharing stuff, and think about folks maybe trying to implement at a health plan, ChatGPT to upload stuff. How are you doing that? Where's that going? ChatGPT is storing that information. Are you now violating your HIPAA obligations? So there's so many considerations that come into play. And I think it's definitely an emerging area. And I think I'm a little bit older, but for those younger lawyers and more techie and involved and inclined, I think it's a great area to concentrate in. And I think you're going to start seeing a lot more of that from an advisory kind of point, in terms of from a legal standpoint, advising on AI integration, data analytics, security, preventing data breach. All that is very important. And so I think that's another area in terms of emerging trends. Maybe answering your prior question for pharmaceutical companies and others, that's something to take a look at, and particularly for those that maintain that patient confidential information and HIPAA protected information. Yeah, very important.
Right.
Especially for us. So.
Right. Yeah. John Paul, this was amazing. Thank you for talking to me and thank you for setting aside the time to speak with me today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm very happy to be here.
As for our listeners, we'd love to hear from you. Feel free to contact me with any healthcare related questions or subjects you think we should cover by emailing me at akaylor@techtarget.com. And if you like this episode, please consider rating or reviewing us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back soon.
This is a TechTarget production.